prosperity, government accountability, and freedom.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Simpuga. This evening we talk about the political situation in Ethiopia. And with us tonight is Hussein Kiflo, the political commentator. Hussein Kiflo, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Douglas. I'm happy to be on this show after a long time.
You're very much welcome. And joining us is regular panelist Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. He joins us from Durban, South Africa. Suleiman, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me, as always.
You're very much welcome. As I said, tonight we're talking about the situation in Ethiopia. Ethiopia, Africa's second most populous nation, is no stranger to unrest. In June, the murder of activist, singer, and political icon Hachalu Hundessa ignited violence across Addis Ababa and other Ethiopian cities. This is the latest chapter in this country's tumultuous journey from authoritarian rule towards genuine democracy. So the story of Ethiopia is big, Hussein. Let me begin with Kiflo here. So what are you hearing from there now? What's the situation like? It's been a lot of arrests, a lot of killings.
Yeah, a lot of killings and arrests. In fact, the killings are not ordinary killings. It's almost in a genocidal proportion. The people are being killed along ethnic lines. They are being singled out because of their ethnicity and religion. And Abiy's government is unable. In fact, I would also say that it's reluctant to protect these people who are being targeted in this genocidal killing. So the situation is very, very sad. And it didn't come out of the blue. It all boils down to the way Ethiopia adopted the ethnic federalism has been imposed on Ethiopia by his previous boss, Malla Zenawi. There was no meaningful debate. Ethiopians were not free to discuss about their fate when the military regime, Derg, led by Mengistu Haile Mariam, was toppled in 1991. So we got out of from one dictatorship, military dictatorship, and then went into another dictatorship, ethnic liberators, who styled themselves as Democrats. So that's why we are having all this problem. And Abiy came from that background. He was a member of EPRDF. Mm. And now, even though he says that he changed his party, the ruling party, and he named it as a prosperity party, nothing has changed.
Mm-hmm. I see. Suleiman, Kiflo there says the Abiy, nothing has changed, but when Abiy came in 2018 as the new prime minister, he committed himself to national reconciliation and political openness. He lifted the state of emergency, welcomed greater press freedom, released political prisoners, and invited dissidents to return from exile. Now, that situation seems to have changed.
Douglas and Hussein, you see, Africa, we have had a problem since independence. These are one of our failures, the failure to do state formation. We have had cracks almost. The whole sub-Saharan countries, we have had these problems. We have got a cynic problem. We have got a religious problems. And so far, so good, we have failed to get leadership which has been able to unite the people to do proper state formation. We are moving along those cracks. And when a particular leadership makes a mistake and stays in power for a long term, it aggravates the situation. You'll find that from south to north, Nigeria, religious teaching, north and the rest. You go Ivory Coast, north and south. You go to Cameroon, English speaking versus French speaking. You go to Kenya, the central versus the rest. You go to Uganda, the south or the north versus the south. So in many of these countries, and once the leadership has stayed in power, they entrench those divisions. They systematically destroy the systems. They create institutions which are geared towards entrenching those systems. You find the security systems, they are built to ensure that they suppress the other system. The economic system is divided into those who are privileged and the unprivileged. So once that system collapses, there is always a likelihood of an implosion.
Mm-hmm.
In Ethiopia, there was a sort of a transition, there was a sort of a passover from one to the other, just like in Zimbabwe. But the unfortunate situation was that it was a change within the same system. And where you have had a dictatorship for a long time, you need the transition period, a healing period, a reorganization period, not a change from one from within to another. That is why you find Zimbabwe, there is no movement. Ethiopia, on the surface, we thought this Dr. Bey would be able to put the situation together. But the systems are so entrenched, they needed to be dismantled first before Ethiopia could take a step forward.
I see. Akiflo, following up on Suleiman's point there, to what extent is the situation there a problem of ethnicity, or is it a failure of leadership or political leadership?
It's both. Like I said, Abiy hailed from this system established by the so-called liberator movements led by Malla Zenawi, and they imposed this ethnic federalism. They divided Ethiopia along ethnic, you know, with ethnic enclaves, you know, on the basis of language, which we never had before. So instead of bringing the people together, they fomented this bitter division. They, you know, just to divide and rule. They focused on past, you know, on not well documented and well established information. They focused on past animosity, on past injustice, and it's not even proven that whether these so-called injustices had happened. So that created a lot of problem. And now when Abiy came to power, you know, he gave this mixed signal. On one hand, whenever he finds it convenient, he plays along with the extreme Oromo nationalists. And when he finds it convenient that to pander to the feelings of the Ethiopian patriots, and he gives lip service to Ethiopian nationalism. But in the meantime, there are other, you know, sober, these days their numbers are not many. They told him, they advised him to come up with a roadmap, with a meaningful transition, you know, so that he departs from the ethnic federalism. They predicted what kind of problem it would create in the very near future unless he deals with this problem, with this ethnic federalism. He was not willing to do that. Like I said, he was giving mixed signal to both camps, and when he speaks in Amharic, previously Malla Zenawi, when he speaks to Ethiopians in Amharic, you know, he never bothered to hide his dictatorial instincts, and he tells us in Amharic, in our own language, you know, how he shows us how tyrant he is. But when he speaks in international forum in English, you know, he was all Democrat. He knows what the international community wants to hear. So in fluent English, you know, he cracks in all democratic principles. Now, when it comes to Abiy Ahmed, in Oromifa, in the second populous ethnic language, in Oromifa, he speaks something, you know, the Oromo extreme ethnocentrics want to hear. When he speaks in Amharic to the Ethiopians, he panders to the Ethiopian nationalism, but this didn't serve anyone. We got to the point where we are today. So Abiy, of course, he freed political prisoners. He pretended to open up space, but sooner, now like we're seeing now, he's jailing many people. You know, he promised that he would investigate before going to incarcerate anyone, unlike his former boss, Malla Zenawi. But now he's incarcerating people left, right, and center. You know, even the way Jawar Muhammad, for instance, one of the Oromo extreme leaders, Jawar Muhammad, and his company might have crossed some line with some egregious ethnically and religious inciting public utterances. But it's not only him. It's his Abiy Ahmed's own officials, such as Shimelis Abdissa. He's the leader, the president of the state they call Oromia region. Publicly, he made a very inciting speech, ethnically inciting speech. Jawar might have crossed this line, like I said. Indeed, he has crossed the line. Now, the problem for me is Abiy Ahmed's regime has a moral ground to accuse Jawar Muhammad? In the first place, Ethiopia still doesn't have independent judiciary. That's the problem. And to make matters worse, Abiy Ahmed went ahead and incarcerated Iskender Nagga. Iskender Nagga was opposing all this Abiy Ahmed's alliance with the Oromo extremists, his reluctance to come up with a clear-cut transition that would work for all Ethiopians. And he was also exposing the way his own mayor, the mayor, Addis Ababa's mayor called Takala Umar, he has been changing the demography of Addis Ababa. He was displacing Addis Ababa residents, those non-Oromo residents in Addis Ababa, particularly considered to be Amharas. They were displacing these people, and now they are giving prime land, like condominium houses, in the spirit of it's our turn to eat. You know, so all this is bringing Ethiopia to a problem. Now, the militant singer, they call him iconic singer. To some, he may be iconic singer, but he was tilted to Oromo nationalism. But now there is faction fight between the Oromos who are in the palace, led by Abiy Ahmed, and the Oromos led by Jawar Muhammad and company. And in the process, they made this singer expendable. And now they are lionizing him, you know. In fact, I would also boldly say that Abiy Ahmed himself is a prime suspect in the killing, in the assassination of this young singer, whom both sides...
Why would he want him gotten rid of?
Yes, you know, why he want him to get rid of him, to assassinate him. I'm not saying that. I don't have concrete evidence, but in my book, he's a prime suspect. The reason is, you know, to sideline Jawar and company, he might think that this is, you know, the moment. And also that camp, my suspicion works both ways. Also that camp, the Jawar camp, let's get rid of this singer, this young singer, let's use him as expendable, and then blame all the dirty work on Abiy, and of course they also blame a certain ethnic group in Ethiopia. They the derogatory expression is Naftanya. Mm. And so that's why we see all this madness in Ethiopia now.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from Washington. And our topic tonight, we're talking about the political situation in Ethiopia. Our panelists are Hussein Kiflu, a political commentator, joining us from Dallas, Texas, and Suleiman Mugula, joining us from Durban, South Africa, and I'm your host, Douglas Mpuga, here in Washington. Suleiman, despite all we hear about what's happening in Ethiopia, somehow, Kiflu referred to this, on the international stage, Ethiopia has played its PR very well. It's not getting condemnation as would be expected.
Yeah, the problem is that by the time of all this was happening, by the time of transition, by the time of change to Abir, it found Ethiopia on a very good economic trajectory. There was some economic development going on, almost. It was in the leash of those African fast growing economies on the continent. Some development was taking place. If one visits Addis Ababa, you could see development springing up. So number two, Abiy himself, his demeanor was good. He was able to put on a very good PR. A Nobel Prize winner, he was able to stand for all the good system you can think of. So it comes at a background where the new regime had played very good PR and everything was moving in for him. So the unfortunate situation came at that background, but sincerely speaking, that could not prevent. For those who know the inside politics like Hussein, he knew very well, many people knew, that it would not take long before it erupts, because the nature of dictatorship, whether benevolent, they suppress emotions of the people. They establish suppressive institutions which do not allow the people to express themselves. They force their ideas, their beliefs on the majority of the people. So the moment they said they are removed from power, the whole situation explodes. The fault lines appear again. That is what is happening in Ethiopia. It cannot be different if today, for example, from what happened in Zimbabwe when Mugabe was removed, the situation cannot settle because the divide between the Shonas and Ndeberes is still there, just as it was there between the Tutsis and the Hutus, that as it would be there in Kenya if you are to get the Westerners from the central people, just as it would be there after Museveni in Uganda, where you would see the Southerners versus the rest of the country. So this is the problem which the continent is facing. We have failed to get leadership which can go above all this tribal and religious difference and build a nation like South Africa, where we have everybody incorporated, done democratically, done inclusively, done with the consent of the people, giving the people, all ordinary people, the opportunity to sit down, discuss the future of their country, discuss the type of unity they want, discuss the type of nation which they want, not the one which is forced on them, as you said, by the so-called liberators who come when they have got their individual and group interests.
I see. Talking of the political situation in Ethiopia, so far the latest round of negotiations between Egypt, Sudan, and Ethiopia over Ethiopia's contentious dam on the Blue Nile has ended with no agreement, according to officials from Sudan and Egypt. This failure sinks the modest hopes that the three countries could resolve their differences and send an agreement on the dam's operation before Ethiopia begins to fill the dam, said to be Africa's largest. I think Ethiopia had previously pledged to start storing water in the dam's reservoir at the start of the wet season when rains flood the Nile. So, Kiflu, what do you make of this?
As things stand, I don't think Egypt and Ethiopia will ever come to agreement, because in my book, both Cairo and Addis Ababa use Blue Nile, this dam, to deflect attention from misgovernance in their respective nation.
Yes.
When it comes to Ethiopia, you know, the genesis of this dam, what they call GERD or Grand Renaissance Dam, when he started it, in the first place, Ethiopia's desire to build dam did not begin with Malla Zenawi. Even Emperor Haile Selassie had that plan, that vision, to build a dam on Blue Nile. But for various reasons, because he was a responsible king, despite being undemocratic when it comes to Ethiopian interest, he had better a responsible mind than the leaders that replaced him. He knew it was not realistic before you build Ethiopian economy in various other spheres. Also, in terms of geopolitics, you know, before you build Ethiopian relation with other neighboring countries and also with superpowers. In terms of military, you know, to pick that disagreement with Egypt, he knew that it was not realistic. Even though Haile Selassie, Emperor Haile Selassie, was allied with the United States, for some reason, now there are historical facts. Americans were not that keen to arm Ethiopia as they armed Egypt later, especially after Sadat switched side from the Soviet camp to the United States. Now, in Ethiopian case, that is a blunder. Malla Zenawi, when he started this this dam, he wanted to deflect attention from his own political mess. He got into this a senseless war with Eritrea in a border town called Badame. And because of that senseless war, he had a faction fight in his own inner circle called Tigray People's Liberation Front, TPLF. They had a faction fight. He came out victorious from that fight. But in the process, he lost his own loyal Tigrayan officials. So he had to replace them by some weak individuals like Hailemariam de Saleng and the like. And still, Ethiopian political problem was simmering. The election of 2005 came, and you know how that election was rigged and how bloody it was. There were many internationally. He became, you know, that put him on a negative spotlight. So he wanted to deflect attention from all this mess. And then the Arab Spring came for him, so he came up with this Grand Renaissance Dam. But this man, this man, Malla Zenawi, at the same time, he turned Ethiopia landlocked with his alliance with the Eritrean secessionists. And now Abiy came to power. When Abiy Ahmed came to power, because he was a part of EPRDF, Malla Zenawi's, because he was a lieutenant of Malla Zenawi, he knew that the genesis of this dam. And he said publicly in Amharic for Ethiopians that this dam, this project will never end even in 10 years. And he said that, you know, he dismissed almost the dam. That, but then he didn't realize how much Ethiopians got carried away with the dam. And so when he censored that, the backlash, and then he made a turn, like, you know, he changed his skin color like a chameleon. And now he suddenly championed the dam. And now people are saying, fill the dam, and we go to war if Egypt. You see, now both Cairo and Addis Ababa, they use the dam for other purposes. It's not for their people, especially on Ethiopian side. I mean, they say now, the propaganda, they say they have started filling the dam, the water is filling the dam. But I fear the implication. What if, like, Cairo is threatening to go to war, what would be the outcome. I don't think there would be a conventional war between the two countries.
Yeah, but briefly, briefly, yeah. Do you think they will fill the dam? Briefly, very briefly. They will?
Pardon?
Do you think they will fill the dam?
I doubt it. I mean, according to the propaganda, they say they have the. There is, you know, information. I don't know how reliable that information is. There is also the case of internet shutdown. Abe, since he came to power, whenever there is a slight problem, he shut down internet. That's another factor. There is suppression of information, information blackout. But according to the emotion of, you know, according to the emotion reigning in Ethiopia now because of this Ethiopian patriotism, they say now fill the dam, and they, on social media, people tell you that they have started filling the dam.
I see.
But would that be the end of the story? That's my concern. Would that be the end of the story?
I see. Suleiman, 10 seconds, what do you think about that, the dam issue?
The dam, as far as Egypt is concerned, the question of water is a matter of life and death. They will go at any lengths to protect that water. As far as Ethiopia is concerned, as time passes, it is also becoming a matter of life and death. Fortunately enough, it is a concern not only now of Ethiopia and Egypt. It has become a regional concern. It has become an international concern. They have been in America before for mediation, and I think the international efforts will continue to see that they think the crisis is amicably solved. Let's hope for the best, because they need each other. The region needs them. We don't need a big war between these two countries.
I see. So, in a word, Kiflo, this could be solved diplomatically. So far, things seem not to be working. Just one word.
It's not working, and... so long as we have a weak leadership such as Abiy Ahmed and the people that he surrounded himself with, I don't think there is going to be any diplomatic solution. Instead of the dam bringing economic empowerment, development for Ethiopians, I think it would bring more problem.
I see.
Egypt would continue to interfere in Ethiopian politics, and Ethiopia doesn't have the means to withstand that kind of interference. It's a mess. The leadership in Ethiopia is a mess.
I see. We'll keep an eye on that. But unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Hussein Kiflu, a political commentator joining us from Dallas, Texas, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Have a good day, Sam.
Thank you. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. And until then, I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga in Washington, wishing you all the best.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa. This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hi there, this is Lori London, host of VOA's International Edition. Join me weekdays at 3:30, 4:30, and 5:30 UTC for the big stories facing our world. From Africa to the Americas and every place in between, we've got you covered with the latest news and information. You'll also